FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
This episode of the Financial Survival Network is brought to you in part by Sandstorm Gold Royalties. Sandstorm Gold Royalties is a different kind of gold company. They purchase royalties on select mining operations and receive a percentage of the revenue in return. Sandstorm now has a portfolio of over 185 gold royalties around the world. See how gold royalties differ from other gold mining investments at sandstormgold.com. That's sandstormgold.com. Sandstorm Gold Royalties trades on the TSX as SSL and on the New York Stock Exchange American as SAND.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 2/4/19. January behind us. Markets rebounded. Everything is fine. Dow 25,000. What could go wrong? Well, lots could go wrong. There's lots of things off on the horizon. First, as always, you hear something on the show that strikes your fancy, that makes you want to talk, just email us back, kl@kerrylutz.com. Well, trade tensions are boiling over, and nobody seems to care. It doesn't seem to matter. Well, it does matter to our good friend, Luke Groman. Luke is, you find him quite simply at FFTT-LLC.com. And Luke, you began your career in research, seems to be a love of yours, and now you've got your own shop. Hey, welcome to the show. And so, trade tensions, you think that the world's just kind of not taking it seriously enough?
I think that's the reaction. Ultimately, and what we're seeing manifest in markets for the moment is that they're not taking it seriously enough. I think the underlying story is a bit more nuanced or has more depth than that. And by that I mean it's difficult as a money manager to position assets for. Even if it's a likely case, it's still a tail risk. I guess it's still a tail risk on some level, but it's rapidly moving towards being a much more likely case. A non mutually beneficial outcome to the China-U.S. trade tensions, and so as a portfolio manager, it's very difficult to position for no deal. But I think increasingly that's becoming that these are, a year ago or in the third quarter, we borrowed a phrase from Graham Allison, which is that the trade tensions between the U.S. and China are going to get worse before they get worse. Mm-hmm. And I think there is just this belief that that maybe there will be a positive outcome and people are going to sit tight and hope that they'll get that. But increasingly, it's not looking like that's going to be the case. I think people are using the wrong set of rules, a set of rules that was sort of post-Cold War. And, we're moving towards a new Cold War, maybe.
Yeah, well, and maybe a hot Cold War. Who knows? Well, the thing is that nobody was going to stand up to China. And if Trump hadn't been elected, the U.S. would have probably never stood up to them and just let them gladly march on to world domination. Maybe what Trump is doing isn't going to matter in the long run. Maybe it will staunch their march forward. But point is, somebody had to stand up. There's a lot of things the Chinese do, and not that the U.S. is perfect by any stretch. Certainly not. A lot of their practices, like forced technology transfers, etc., and the lack of foreign ownership, foreign companies, entities only being allowed to own 49% of an investment in China. All these things really unfair and doesn't happen in the U.S. So is this a bad thing necessarily?
I don't know that it's necessarily a bad thing or a good thing. I think it just sort of is. The challenge in all of this is that all of those things that China are doing are unsavory, and I think a perfectly rational response to something that we do with the currency, which is to say, we enforce, you know, we have some of the same draconian standards as it relates to only using the dollar for commodity transactions globally, mm-hmm. for the dollar as reserve currency, for anybody else being able to print dollars for commodity imports. And that's why I think the situation between the U.S. and China are so untenable in terms of, you know, it's going to get worse before it's going to get worse, which is to say, the U.S. wants to have the dollar continue to be structured as it's been structured after Bretton Woods, after we defaulted on Bretton Woods, or after we, you know, closed the gold window, but also, you know, have, you know, sort of the pre-Bretton Woods system benefits too, where we were, you know, producing more things, et cetera, right? So we want our cake and we want to eat it too, and we can't. And that's one of the things we've been talking about a lot, which is to say China wants their cake and they want to eat it too. And so the challenge is that multiple fold. It's a matter of national security for the U.S. not to give China their way. It's a matter of Chinese national security not to give the U.S. their way. And in the meantime, from a financial perspective, whether we think it's a good thing or bad thing, the world system is not set up to not work the way it's worked for the past 30 to 40 years. And so unwinding, you know, there is a lot of debt. There's a, you know, equity prices. The world's assets are all priced off of an assumption that the system that was put in place to U.S., you know, to multinational corporations benefit over the last 30, 40 years is going to continue. And if it doesn't continue, pretty much everything's mispriced. Mm-hmm. And so that's the challenge in this.
So evidently they've come to some type of preliminary agreement where the Chinese are going to buy a whole bunch more U.S. goods, exports, and they're going to allow joint venture companies to own the majority share of the joint venture in China. And it looks like forced technology transfers falling by the wayside. I mean, look, in this game, who has the most to lose?
They both do. You know, there is a book I've read recently is called The Raven of Zurich, and it's the memoirs of Felix Sommery, who is a Swiss, I think he's Austrian by nationality, but Swiss banker. And the book is hard to come by. You can find PDFs of it for free online. It's expensive on eBay. The gist of it is this: is he writes his diary starting around 1890 through, call it, 1945, and so you see the progression in real time without knowing how it ended. The rising tensions between the UK and Germany that began. You know, there was the, you know, it's interesting, the 1850s, the UK moved to a more free trade. They started outsourcing production and labor to support consumption. It was good for the banks. It was good for consumers. It was not good for producers. You know, it was part of what drove the Irish potato famine. You had a big financial crisis in the early 1870s. And at that point, Germany, who sort of up to that point had bought into the new liberal economics policies of England, said, this isn't working for us. We're going back to a more centralized production. And they began to outgrow and outperform and strategically compete with the UK Navy, the UK, you know, UK hegemony. And so from, call it, 1880 to 1900, 1905, Germany outgrows, outperforms, gains relative power relative to the UK. And it gets to a point where all of a sudden the UK realizes they're going to get bypassed, that their system doesn't work. And so the UK faces a choice. They can either change their system or they can just sort of, you know, try to sanction, try to, fight. And ultimately this competition, you know, was a direct, you know, led directly to World War One, which led directly to World War Two, you know, basically 30 years of just pretty much the worst case scenario for humanity, for asset prices, et cetera. The point in all of this is, by way of background, is that by 1905, Felix Sommery, the Swiss banker, who happens to be just connected with people at the highest positions of power all around Europe, right? King Edward and the, you know, variety of the German emperors or chancellors. And at any rate, he's asked, you know, what, where will you put your money, you know, if, you know, from here. And he says, look, if my plans to get the two of them to work together don't work out, I'm not going to invest in either of them because they'll destroy each other. I'm going to put my money in America and I'll put my money in Switzerland, but I can't invest in the two powers of the time, the UK and Germany, because they're going to destroy each other. And of course, his plans to get them to work together did fail, and they did destroy each other. And you know, and America benefited, and you know, Switzerland benefited, Swiss assets. And so the same type of thing here, when you say who's got more leverage, you know, it's like Michael Short or Michael Lewis said in The Big Short. They're like two guys fighting to the death in a boat, and one guy might beat the other one to death and throw him overboard only to find that he's tied to him at the waist. And that's the same kind of thing here, where this system is set up for a mutually assured destruction standpoint. And I just don't think people understand that that dynamic of it. I mean, or they're not positioning for it because I don't think they believe it can happen. I think they think there's going to be a deal. And I don't think they appreciate that there can't be a deal yet.
Yeah. At some point, though, isn't somebody going to give here?
Yeah, they're both on the clock. Right. So, in, you know, China's economy appears to be weakening much faster than the U.S.'s from a higher overall growth rate. And so it really comes down to, you know, who can take the most amount of pain. And you can kind of line up pros and cons to both sides in terms of a number of different standpoints there. And so to me, it really comes down to, you know, who blinks first, who feels the most pain first politically, up until now, it's been we're going to win and we're going to break them with the dollar. And all of a sudden, the Fed's reversing course, as the U.S. economy is being shown that it can't decouple from China. It's not going to decouple from China. You've started to see that with some of the earnings releases in the last week or two. I'm hopeful that they will come to some sort of deal. But unless such deal is a really comprehensive trade deal that devalues the dollar, devalues the dollar's role, or changes it in the context of being a global reserve currency, there's just – I don't know that either side can really agree to anything, short of that. And, the question then is that something the U.S. is willing to cede, or are we willing to basically break the world and break our own economy to fight for that? And I think there are parties in the U.S. that are willing to do that. I don't know that would be good for the U.S., but it would be good for those parties. Mm-hmm. And that to me is the real question.
Interesting. Well, we're definitely living in interesting times. That's for sure.
No doubt.
Really? So you really think it's a question of the dollar and its future role in international transactions? I mean, there has been a trend towards de-dollarization. Only 60% of the world's international trade is taking place in dollars. What's interesting is that even though that's taken place, still, if you're a money manager in Europe or Asia, are you going to, you have to park some money at $10 billion, say, for the weekend, you're going to park it in treasury bills at a U.S. bank or at Deutsche Bank or at a Chinese bank? You know, what are the money managers doing with their money? So regardless how diminished the dollar might be, it's still when you've got big bucks to park and that you need to keep safe, that hopefully you'll be there, after the Super Bowl's over, where else are you going to put it?
Oh, no question. And that is that it's absolutely the case. And it's also, it ties into that we want to have our cake and eat it too. If you look after, 1971, when we closed the gold window, we basically shifted the world's primary reserve asset, from gold-backed treasuries to just treasuries. And so gold was really the reserve asset, and now it was nothing. But since 1999, the United States or the global FX reserve balances in treasuries have grown by about $670 billion a year, every year from 1999 or 2000 till 2014. That is by far our biggest export by a factor of two or three. And so the United States has to decide, does it want to be in the dollar export business, or does it want to actually make stuff? Because right now Trump's policy is, and a lot of the media in the U.S. is, we want to be in the dollar export business and we want to be in the stuff export business. It doesn't work that way. Mm. It can't work that way. The United States needs to decide which it wants to be in. And so to your point, yes, if we want to keep having, you know, the treasury market be the market where all this money can get dumped in, then that's fine. But then we can't be in the stuff production business. Our job is to make treasuries. And the reality is, you look around the country and see, the areas that have moved ahead, the areas that have fallen behind economically, those that have moved ahead are very tied to the treasury export business. It's Washington. It's Wall Street. It's the financial sector in total. It's consumer driven lending. And the areas that have fallen behind have been sort of production related. And, you're seeing, an attempt to move back in the other direction. But again, if you can't have both, we have to make a choice. And that then kind of ties into this, that's one angle where unless the structure of the dollar's reserve status is changed, there can't really be a deal. The other point is really that if people talk about the Chinese system, it's a Ponzi scheme. They've got a ton of debt. They have more debt per cap or more debt per level of GDP and et cetera. The European banking system, yes, problematic in a big way. But then they turn around and say, hey, the euro dollar system is the world system and that's the way it works. And strong, dollar shortages in the euro dollar system are going to drive problems everywhere. And I agree with that. But here's the thing they're leaving out is if it's a euro dollar centric system and the Chinese system has a problem, it's not the Chinese system, it's the dollar system. If the European system has a problem, it's the dollar system. Right. So it's will they have a problem first? Quite possibly, maybe even probably. The question is how long, let's pretend Deutsche Bank blows up. In my opinion, the U.S. banking system will have a problem in weeks, days, or hours. Mm-hmm. Most people seem to think it's months. My guess is it's probably days or hours, because the reality is what would probably happen is either Chinese authorities or European authorities, wherever it was, would just shut down the banking system. They say banks are closed for a week. Markets are closed for a week. And so if you have assets over there, where are you going to go? You're going to go to the one market that's still open, America, and you're going to start selling. And so it's this dynamic of how long is the rope, connecting the U.S. to Europe to China? And the understanding or the expectation is that rope is a half mile long. It's a mile long. They will have problems and we'll be okay for a while. And the reality is, if you look at the numbers, the rope's probably 3 feet long. Maybe it's 6 feet long. It's just wherever there's a problem, it's going to spread it remarkably quickly and require extraordinary steps by monetary and fiscal authorities, in my opinion.
And you think this day of reckoning is coming? How far off is it?
I think it's there's two sides. There's a fiscal side and then there's the geopolitical side. Mm-hmm. I think it's much closer than people think. And I think if you look at whether it's Chinese fiscal side, whether it's U.S. fiscal side, whether it's Europe fiscal side, they are all getting problematic more rapidly than most people think. You've seen a lot of you've seen a number of really big names, right? Ray Dalio and Druckenmiller and Gundlach, yeah. And most recently Seth Klarman talking about the U.S. fiscal situation, the dollar's reserve status as a result of what's happening with the U.S. fiscal situation. These are guys who have never thrown that term. No one has brought up the dollar's reserve. None of these guys. They don't talk about the dollar's reserve status. They don't talk about the U.S. fiscal situation because it's been totally irrelevant for the last, 40, 50, 70 years. That they're bringing it up now, I think, is a huge mile marker in terms of where we are in this process. And it's hard to say, here's when it's coming, because everyone's, the models all assume, the government models in terms of debt sustainability are all based on linear models and no recessions or problems basically anywhere in the world between now and 2030. Mm-hmm. And so it's another one of these cases of where, it's likely to be very nonlinear. So it's I do think that it's you know, the fiscal situations, and then, you know, the geopolitical side, as I mentioned, that's another angle where you really are in a situation where it's a matter of national security for the U.S. not to allow China to get their way. And it's a matter of Chinese national security not to allow the U.S. To prevent China from getting their way. And it's a tricky setup that, you know, people are sort of, you know, complacently watching. I think they're pretty aware of it, but it's going to be one of these situations where if something breaks one way or another, the reaction will be very swift, because people will, you know, then, you know, it'll be a case of no one panics and then everyone tries to panic all at once.
Yeah. All right. Well, it sounds like we're getting ready for interesting times ahead for sure. And question is the U.S. just a declining power and needs to step aside? Or can we not, as a civilization, as Western civilization, cede this ground to the Chinese, who really place virtually no importance upon individual rights and the individual sovereignty, if you will, in the whole process? And up until Donald Trump, I would have said they pretty much are willing to roll over and they're happy doing it. But now Trump has changed the dynamic, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think definitely on the international side, they have the dynamic has changed. You know, I look at it, and I imagine you're familiar with the, you know, sort of the two sort of most famous dystopian novels, future novels, right? 1984 by George Orwell and Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. And they both posit a view of the future that is dystopian, but two different dystopian futures. 1984 is very totalitarian, you know, sort of boot on the face of humanity, as Orwell's quote went, you know, surveillance and control, etc. And Brave New World, Huxley's, is much different. It is still government control and absolute control, but the method of control is by distraction and drugs and entertainment and, you know, sex, etc. And so as I look at sort of the two, you know, the G2, if you will, right, U.S., China, you know, I see, you know, China, who seems to be using the 1984 method internally and the Brave New World method externally, with, you know, throwing money at, you know, and loans at other emerging markets to try to gain access and do business with for commodities and ports, etc. And then I look at the U.S. and I see the Brave New World model used internally and the 1984 model used externally, right? We can ask Saddam about that. We can ask what we're doing in Venezuela about that. We can ask, the sanctions regimes we've applied to various different nations. And I'm not saying there aren't necessarily good reasons those are in place, but ultimately those are they are literally boots on the ground, right? Boots. So it's, to me, it is, you know, these two forces pushing at each other. And I think the methods of control are both how they've evolved. They're evolutionary, they're cultural. To me, it speaks to sort of two big tectonic plates pushing against each other with increasing force. And, you know, people reading a lack of slippage between the two as a lack of pressure, you know, when it slips, you know, and I think we may have started to see early signs of the slippage in the fourth quarter of last year as it relates to risk asset prices. But this, you know, the cultural dynamics are just so different that, again, it speaks to this: things will get worse before they get worse, because it makes it much harder to talk on similar terms.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, it's going to be fascinating to see how it unwinds, Luke. Hey, we want to find out more about you. Check out your work on the site, on the web. Where's the best place to find you?
Absolutely. So FFTT, Frank Tom LLC.com, our website. We've got a number of different products at different price points in terms of research, and have a very active Twitter handle at Luke Groman, LukeGromen, all one word. Kind of update stories and some thoughts there. And so, happy to follow up with people. If you go to our website, there's an email info@fftt-llc.com that you can email if you want more information on anything. And that's where you can find us.
All right. Excellent. Hey, and hey, if you're listening to the show, you enjoy it, why not share it with a friend? Whether you're on YouTube, you can subscribe, like, and share. Or if you're just listening to the podcast, just share it with a friend. Hey, it really helps the show when you do that a lot. Helps me, helps get the word out. You know, where else are you going to hear interviews like the one we just had with Luke? It isn't that prevalent, and they're shutting the web down. So share it with a friend. Get the word out. Luke, really appreciate you coming on. We'll talk to you again real soon.
That sounds great. Thanks for having me on.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.